Luke 10, beginning at verse 38, a familiar passage, but again, only in Luke. Says it came to pass that they went, that's Jesus and the guys, the disciples, as they went, that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. She had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. Martha was cumbered about with much serving and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, and you can, in your own mind, put the emphasis wherever you want here, Martha. Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part that shall not be taken from her. Before we begin, I'd like to read that also from a translation by Kenneth Wiest, expanded translation, a Greek scholar from Moody Institute this century translates it this way. And you'll like some of this. Now, as they were going on their way, he himself entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him as a guest into her home. And she had a sister called Mary, who also, having seated herself beside the Lord's feet, was listening to his word. But Martha was going around in circles, overoccupied with preparing the meal. And bursting in upon Jesus, she assumed a stance over him. You can see her. She assumed a stance over him and said, Lord, is it not a concern to you that my sister has let me down to be preparing the meal alone? Speak to her, therefore, at once, that she take hold and do her part with me. And answering, the Lord said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and excited about many things, but of few things there is need. For Mary chose out for herself the good portion, which is of such a nature that it shall not hastily be snatched away from her. So that gives us a little bit more light onto the scene with the girls here as we look at it. You're familiar with the passage as I studied this week and just looked over it. Of course, it's always convicting for me because I find in my own life I can very easily become a Martha, and we'll talk about that. And find that my service for Christ definitely gets in the way of my communion with Jesus Christ. I get so wrapped up in what I'm doing that I start to run on my own energy. I get burnout, and next thing you know, I'm barking at people, and my wife is saying, why are you so crabby? And I'm going, I'm not crabby, you know, and just. And you just kind of have to say, well, if the fruit of the Spirit is love, where am I at, Lord? I'm just kind of running out of gas here. I'm running on my own energy. Just forgive me. I need to come back to you. When I first got saved, Jesus, it was just me and you. It wasn't all this other stuff, and I was happy. And Lord, settle me down. And I find because, I think the things that we want to do for Jesus, whether it's going to Bible studies or being part of a particular kind of ministry or driving our kids to Christian school. I mean, there's so many Christian things we do that are so tangible. We don't have to look for them. They're waiting for us when we wake up. They're on the phone. They're in the mail. They're standing in our face. They're chasing us down in a hallway. We're facing them in traffic. It's almost our involvement with Christian things and Christian service is very tangible. tangible, and it's very easy to involve ourselves in it because it's right there, whereas the presence of Christ is often not as tangible as I wish that it was. There are times when I'm on my knees before the Lord and I'm just wishing, I wish you were just here so I could lean on your breast like John did. I just wish I could hear your voice, Lord, but I just wish you were just right here because I feel like I just need to cry on your shoulder. I just wish you were present. And I find that that part of my relationship with Christ, you know, I have to really settle myself there and quiet myself. And my life is neither quiet nor settled. And I really have to seek that time to be alone with him. But those are the times when I'm renewed. It's there that the tears begin to flow. It's there that my batteries get charged. It's there that life comes to me. It's there I'm reminded about what my relationship with Jesus really is all about. And I can understand both Mary and Martha. And I pray in my own life that I can serve like Martha, but that I can worship like Mary. And we have the picture of these two women. Now, let me say this also. If you're here this morning and you don't know Christ personally, we'll address the whole issue of what God wants from us. And maybe it'll help you understand a little bit what we believe. But for the believer, it's a great exhortation because it's not in this picture that we're choosing. And I think so much in our life, we really want to serve Christ. We're not choosing between good and evil. We know that. But we're making choices all day. The Christian life, the Christian experience is a series of choices and choosing what the Word says, choosing the leading of the Holy Spirit. And yet, within that, we can choose, I think, sometimes the choices between what's better and what is best. Simpson, who began the Christian Missionary Alliance, said that often the enemy of making the best choice is making the better choice. In other words, as Christians, the choices we're making in general are just better than many of the choices that we made before we came to Christ, many of the choices that are being made in the world. We're choosing good and noble things. But there are times in choosing something that actually is better and good that it gets in the way of choosing what is best. And sometimes that is just to sit at his feet and to be alone with him rather than choosing to do a good thing for him. And we have that exhortation here. And I believe it's from the Lord's heart. And the message is that he would rather have us than what we can do for him. And I think that's clearly contained in this. So I want to look at Martha, though, because what happens so often is I think somebody will say, well, that person's a real Martha. And that means look out for them. They'll give you a heart attack if you hang around with them. You know, that's a very, you know, it's in a negative context. Look out for that person. That person's a real Martha. Well, I think that's because we haven't looked closely at her. She is actually quite a remarkable woman. We are not sure where the friendship between Lazarus, and who was their brother, and Mary and Martha began. We have Jesus coming to their home here in Bethany. Evidently, it's a place that he loves to go to. He finds a time there to relax, to be with people that he cared about. It was a haven for him. But we don't have a previous record where really this relationship got off the ground. But as we look at it, I think it's amazing. Turn to John chapter 11. It will throw some light on this relationship. It's to the right. Page 139. And you know this story, but there's some things we want to take note of. It says, John 11, verse 1 says, now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus, of Bethany, the town of Mary. That's interesting, because back here in our study it says Martha received him into her house, but it looks like the town was Mary's and the house was Martha's. They had a different personality. Martha probably liked to cook, and Mary liked to cook, but Mary liked to cook and didn't like to clean up afterwards. Martha just liked to be there the whole time. Mary seems to be very in tune with other folks. I mean, look, We all have different characteristics. We all have different traits. God uses us that way. We're all individuals. Some people are very contemplative. They like to sit. They like to think. They like to read. Other people like to play sports. Some people love to work. I mean, Martha just has that industrious hospitality. You know, she just is very mature. She likes to do what she's doing. But she can be a person who's driven. Mary, I imagine, could space out, could sit around, could do certain things. And we're all different. I mean, some people love to go door-to-door witnessing. Other people go up, knock on a door, and pray that nobody's home. And they're only door-to-door witnessing because somebody's condemned them to do it. They should be home praying for people that like to door-to-door witness. Their gifts are different. But here, evidently, it takes note that Mary, that the town, it was the village, the town of Mary and her sister Martha, and it was Mary that was that anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair. His brother Lazarus was sick. Now look at verse 3. Therefore, his sister sent to Jesus, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. Now that's filio there. It means brotherly love, fondness, friendship. That's an interesting, the girls say, Lord, your buddy, Lazarus, Laz, he's the guy you love to hang out with. There was an interesting relationship there. When Jesus heard that, he said, well, this sickness, he says to the guys, that's not unto death, for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now look at verse 5. Now Jesus, this is agape, divine love. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. This is before the miracle now. Quite a relationship they have. Look down at verse 11. Jesus speaking to the disciples. These things said he, and after that he said to them, our friend. Isn't that interesting? Our friend Lazarus is sleeping. Thomas, of course, said, well, that's good. He's sick. He needs his rest. Then it says Jesus has to say plainly, he's dead. He had trouble getting through the guy sometime. Look over there in verse 20. It says, then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. Mary still sat in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother had not died. Now listen to this woman who we think is just a workaholic. Listen to what she says. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it to thee. So Jesus tries her out, of course. He says, okay, your brother's going to rise. You know, whatever I ask, I'm going to get. This is what we'll do. He's going to rise from the dead. Martha says, oh, I know, Lord. He's going to rise again in the last day in the resurrection. Jesus said, no. I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Do you believe this, Martha? Now listen to this answer. This is a remarkable answer. She said unto him, yes, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. Now that is an amazing answer for a girl that we accuse of just being a workaholic. She went back to the house. Interesting, verse 28 says she told Mary, the master's calling for you. And you want to take note, just interestingly, down in verse 45, after the resurrection of Lazarus, it says, many of the Jews which came, notice, to Mary. She was evangelizing, evidently. Many of the Jews which came to Mary, doesn't mention Martha there, and had seen the things which Jesus did, believed on him. So we have this household, these amazing women. I would say, take note of this. John chapter 9 said, anybody who says that Jesus is the Christ, the Pharisees and Sadducees said, the religious leaders of the day, anybody who says Jesus is the Messiah is excommunicated. We're cutting him off from the temple. We're cutting him off from Judaism. Here's Martha, 2 miles in Bethany, from the temple precincts, and she says, I believe that you're the Christ, the Son of God, that should come into the world. That's a remarkable statement. She is standing up in the face of everything, willing to be cut off from her own religion because of her commitment to Christ. That's quite a woman. Are you willing to be cut off from everything, your own family, everything, because of your commitment to Jesus Christ? Not only that, Jesus Christ, from the time of his birth, there was no room for him in the inn. That kind of set the stage of his whole life. He had seen a certain amount of popularity. His popularity is plummeting at this point. John chapter 6, verse 66 tells us that many of his disciples are leaving him now. Now, he had the 12. He had a bigger group. He had sent out 70 at one point. They're leaving him. He's talking about going to Jerusalem, being crucified, that you have to eat his flesh, drink his blood. They're freaked out. Everybody's just saying the heck with him now. And his disciples are leaving him. It tells us in John 5:18 that in Judea, they're planning how they can kill him, the religious leaders. It tells us in that when he was in the area of Gadara, the Gadarenes, they begged him to leave the area. They didn't want him there. It says on this trip, when he's heading south, he's going through Samaria, and the Samaritans would not receive him. There is no place for Jesus at this time. His popularity is dwindling. People are rejecting him and refusing him. A young man comes to him in 9:58 and says, "Lord, I'll follow you anywhere." He says, "Well, the foxes have their dens and the birds of the air have their nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." In other words, you want to follow me? Let me tell you something. The foxes are in their environment. They're at home here. They have their dens here. This is where they live. The birds of the air are at home. They settle down. They have their nest. This is not my environment. I am not from this world. You want to follow me? I am passing through. My only purpose for being here is to do the Father's work and complete it. You can follow me if you want to, but this is not my world, and there is no place for me in this world to rest. Now, that's pretty remarkable, because it says Martha received him and welcomed him into her home. She was quite a woman as far as I'm concerned. And she stood in the face of all kinds of criticism to welcome Jesus and his disciples into her house, opened the doors, made a meal, welcomed them. But it's interesting that she did all that so she could accuse them and neglect them. I think Jesus is welcome in our homes. I pray he is. I mean, we have the things hanging on our walls. We have a Bible by the toilet. We have a Bible in the glove compartment. We have a Bible in the living room. You know, we have Christian posters and stuff on the walls, Christian videos, Christian. And sometimes I think Jesus is waiting around a living room for somebody to talk to him. I mean, my house is like a beehive most of the time. I'm thinking, you know, it's the same way. He's welcome here, but nobody talks to him sometimes. You know, he must be sitting in the living room just feeling neglected like he was here. So I want to take note of this, because here's Martha, invites him in, gets so wrapped up with cooking, she comes out and accuses him. Now, Mary's different. Mary, the three times we hear about her in the Bible, she's at the feet of Jesus. Here she's at the feet of Jesus listening. In John chapter 11, when Lazarus dies, she falls at the feet of Jesus weeping. And in John chapter 12, in Matthew 24, Mark 14, she's there at the house of Simon. She is at the feet of Jesus pouring out an alabaster cruse of ointment, probably her life savings. And she is very perceptive. She's the only woman in the Bible that Jesus says establishes a memorial to her, that wherever this gospel is preached in all of the world, that which she has done shall be mentioned in memorial of her. And Mary knows there is something better cooking in the living room than what's cooking in the kitchen. Something eternal is cooking in a living room. What's cooking in the kitchen is going to be gone tomorrow. So evidently she helped. Look what it says here in verse 39. She had a sister called Mary, which also, see that word also is important. She also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. What it means is, it doesn't mean her and Martha also sat, doesn't mean Martha also sat there. That's not the context of the story. It means that Mary was working in the kitchen, but what she also did was left the kitchen and went and sat at Jesus' feet to hear his word. She also did that. So she's not a bum. Mary, a space case, she worked, she served, but she knew it was important to sit at the feet of Christ. Martha, on the other hand, look, when we look at her, she is courageous, she is standing, she is willing to lose friends, reputation for her relationship with Jesus. There's no compromise. Jesus Christ is welcome in her home, and he's not welcome anywhere at this particular point in his ministry. Martha is hospitable, she's industrious, she's diligent, she is bent on serving. That's a good thing. She's mature, but she's a work junkie, she's driven, she's a worrier. She would do a kind of woman, when she's in the flesh, it could drive you out of your mind. And a man the same way can do the same thing. And there's some indicators you want to take note of in your own life when you get to that point. And I can get there. We can all get there. First of all, if you're accusing Jesus of slowing down the ministry, you need to go back and think about what you're saying. She goes out and says to Jesus, "Don't you care?" And it says that, you know, she put her hands on her hips first and stood over him. The Lord of the universe, the Creator's in the living room. "Don't you care?" And basically, when we do that to God, what we're saying is, "You don't realize that my plans are more important than yours. Don't you understand what I'm involved in and how bad I need your help? And why aren't you, you know, there you are sitting in the living room talking about eternity, salvation, crucifixion, resurrection. I'm cooking lamb. Don't you know what's important here?" And that's usually when we're accusing God or we're complaining, that's what we're doing. We're saying, "I've got something going on here that doesn't seem to be very important to you." Usually when we're doing that, usually, and sometimes there's tremendous pain, I understand that none of us respond well, but most of the time, we need to slow down and think, "What in the world am I thinking?" Once you accuse God, it's easy to accuse other people. Then, notice, no longer Mary, it's that sister of mine. That's what she says to Jesus. She doesn't bother to call her Mary. She says, "Lord, don't you care that that sister left me? That husband of mine, you know, when I come home from work and my wife's saying, 'Your son,' you know, then you know things are changing. I own him. She don't own him anymore. He did something. That sister of mine." Let me tell you something. If Jesus tells you to do something, you should do it. And you should do it as unto the Lord. And you should look to Jesus Christ for the reward for that service. If you start grumbling and complaining, and let me tell you, I've been in ministry for a long time. Ministry is full of people, including me sometimes, that are pointing their finger at other people, complaining about other people who are supposed to be ministering. Because you're overwhelmed with ministering, with serving, and you're grouchy because you're overwhelmed, and you've already accused God, so you might as well accuse people too. And she's saying, "It's that Mary's fault. Here I am alone, I'm doing that." And let me tell you something. Jesus did not come to Martha's house because he heard that she made the best blintzes in Judea. You understand? Jesus is there because it is the one place where he can sit in the living room with people he loves that have some hold on who he is, that would welcome him into their home. And the feast that he has there is with Lazarus and with Mary and with Martha, with the family. That is the feast that he's enjoying. If Jesus was coming to your house, listen to me, it's Sunday the 24th. If he was coming to your house Tuesday the 26th at 5 o'clock for dinner, what would you do when you left church today? Ladies, what would you be doing? His last service, a lady right in the front row said, "Clean!" She almost believed me. I thought she was going to... I thought he was coming. I didn't say... I said, "What if he comes?" Not, "He's coming. Calm down." Yelling at the kids, "Get your rooms clean, do this, do that, put the videos away, do this, do, you know, get the beer out of the refrigerator." Would you be saying, I don't have to say that, would you say that? Get a roast beef, get a turkey, you know, I think, you know, I bet that he'd love to jump in a van with all the kids and drive through McDonald's. I bet. I bet the feast would be just sitting and spending time. From my observation, holding my kids on his lap, laughing, talking, saying, "So many times I tried to tell you how much I loved you. You just... So I had to come Tuesday afternoon to tell you." And lastly, then, Martha, she begins to try to manipulate the whole thing. I mean, look, she's throwing a guilt trip on Jesus. You know, I mean, it's bad enough that Satan condemns us. Here's Mary throwing a guilt. I mean, Martha's throwing a guilt trip on Jesus. "Don't you care that my sister's not here? What kind of a Lord are you? You know, you're supposed to care about equity and justice and all things. And what, you know, you're supposed to be the Lord? There's my sister. She's sitting here loafing and you don't even care." you got to have guts to throw a guilt trip on the master. You know what I mean? And he came to deliver grace and forgiveness and life. She's throwing a guilt trip on him. Now, I'll tell you, this brings the story to the point where I appreciate it so much because I'm so much like her in so many ways and get that way so many times. I appreciate the fact that Jesus responds with reproof. He does not rebuke her. He's not angry. There is a pathos. There's a real emotion to this, and that's why it's written the way it is, doubled up. Martha, Martha. He doesn't say, did you read chapter 1 of Luke? Did you hear what happened with Zechariah when he shot his mouth off? And that was just an angel. He couldn't talk for 9 months after that. That was just an angel. He could have gotten one of the donkeys to stick his head in the window and say, Martha, do you know who you're talking to? Like he did, like Balaam's ass. That's the creator of the universe. You know, when Miriam criticized Moses, God smote her with leprosy. Here, this woman was standing with her hands on her hips, nyan, 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 the Lord. And he looks up and goes, Martha, Martha. It's like Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that stonest the prophets and killest those that are sent unto thee, how many times would I have gathered thee under my wings like a hen gathers her chicks, and you would not. And now your house is left unto you desolate, and henceforth you shall see me no more till you say, blessed is he who cometh in the name of the Lord. Or when Peter says, Lord, though all the rest of these, you know, Jesus said, this night, you know, the prophecy is going to be fulfilled. I'll strike down the shepherd. The sheep shall be scattered. You're all going to forsake me. And Peter says, except me, Lord. You can count on me. There, I know these guys are all going to run away, but I'll be there. And Jesus' response is, Simon, Simon, Satan has desired to sift you as wheat, but I prayed for you that your faith doesn't fail, and in the hour you restored, strengthen your brethren. On the road to Damascus, as Saul is breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the church, and he's knocked off to the ground by this light that appears, and the voice comes from the light, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It's hard for thee to kick against the goads. You know, it's just amazing that Jesus didn't just smoke him with a laser beam or something. You know, he knocked him down and talked sense to him. I mean, and the thing that I appreciate this is there's so much, you know, here I am. I'm the pastor. I preach this stuff. I'm supposed to live by it, you know. You know, and I get so caught up with ministry sometimes that I find myself running out of gas. And I realize, man, I have not been spending the time with Jesus that I should. Because I can get so caught up in things. And Satan's just there to lay a guilt trip on me. I mean, and the thing I love about the Lord is you know, he doesn't say, Joey, Joey. You know, he doesn't do that. But it's you know, I kind of hear this, my son kind of thing. You know, when my boys need to get in line, I call him son. You know, and I hear that kind of thing. Son, come on down here and sit with me for a while. I want to talk to you, you know. And it's never anger. It's reproof, you know. And, you know, Martha will get there. We will see her in John chapter 12 at Simon's house. And tradition, by the way, tells us back to the second century that Simon the leper was the father of Mary and Martha. And perhaps, if that's true, it was his cleansing, when he was cleansed of leprosy, that started this relationship with the family. But it's his house. We see Martha. It says she was serving. And she's waiting on the table going, you know, and she's just working and whistling and singing and listening, and she's not stressed out anymore. There's no mention of her saying, you know what to do, Lord, get Mary up off the floor with that ointment. She's making a whole stink. I got to clean up the floor. I got to cook dinner. I got to do everything. No, none of that is going on. And I love the fact that Jesus in my life is so gentle to continually bring me along as I get off track and I get caught up with things, that he is faithful, as it says in the Song of Songs, draw me and we will run after thee. You know, he's always faithful to draw us back, to bring us back to focus, to bring us back on target again. You see, because the greatest expression, it says here that he says, Martha, Martha, you're so careful and troubled. Careful is our word from the parable of the sower. Remember we said that one of the things that chokes out the word of God in our lives is the cares of this life. Well, that's the same word, careful. The merimna, you feel like you're being pulled in 1,000 directions. That's what the word means, to be pulled in different directions. People say it, I feel like I'm pulled in 1,000 different directions. He says, Martha, Martha, you're so careful and troubled is agitated. We say crabby. Martha, you're... you're all distracted and grouchy. Don McClure says, I used to wake up crabby. Now I let her sleep. I don't know what that means. He said that. And you find yourself getting like that. You feel like you're pulled in 1,000 different directions. You're grouchy. And the Lord's saying, look, there's one thing that's necessary. One thing is needful. And that's one thing can't be taken. And that is to be with Jesus. The thing that Mary did was she was with him. And the thing that will never be taken from us is being with him. Our homes can be taken. Our careers can be taken. Our kids can be taken. Anything in life can be taken. Our service can be taken. All the things. But one thing that will never be taken away from a believer is to be with him. It's the reason he died. Man sat with Adam. I mean, God sat with man in the cool of the day in the book of Genesis before the fall and fellowshipped with him. That was the heart of God. Ever since the fall, the purpose of God in redemption is to bring man back into fellowship with himself. And the highest expression of love is devotion. It's fellowship. It's not service. The highest expression of love is not service. Now look, this is important because, again, I think before we came to Christ, and if you're here, you don't know Christ, it may be your perception. We perceived God as, you know, the great thou shalt not that lived in the sky. And what God was this big guy up there that said, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that, you shall not do this, and I want you to do this, and I want you to do that, I want you to do this. And he was like the big you do, don't do up there. That's all he was, the guy with all the rules. And if I become a Christian, I got to follow all the, what a drag, you know. That isn't at all what it's all about. And the shame of it, I think, you know, Jesus died so that we could come back into fellowship with God. Under his righteousness. And I think the shame of it is we come into the church. And you know, most churches aren't growing and they get somebody new that walks in, they look at you. If you're under 110, they think fresh blood. Fresh blood, sign them up, 50 years in Sunday school, 70 years as an usher. Quick, sign them up, you know. And I think the church gives us the impression that God, all he's interested in is what you can give to him. He's financially in trouble. He wants you to do this. You need to get involved in this ministry. You know. And the truth through Scripture is that what he wants is you. He doesn't want what you can do for him. He's not up in heaven saying, thank God you got here. Now we can organize the kingdom. Do you understand? I painted in the last 2 weeks at my house, two of our bedrooms and our dining room. And of course, you know, it's nothing can be the same color because you have molding and trim. And you just, so you have to cut everything in and be careful and paint from the top down. So as you paint up, then you splatter on, you know, just. And of course, my 7-year-old, they're off from school now. It's the summer the whole time. Days on end, standing there with a brush. Can I help, Dad? Can I help you, Dad? Hey, Dad, can I help you? Can I help you, Dad? Can I use this brush, Dad? Can I help you, Dad? Can I help you, Dad? And I'm thinking, by myself, I'm going to knock this job out in 4 hours. With you, 2 days. It's going to take me 2 days. And when I'm painting a fence in the yard, then they never want to, you know. I say, okay, you can help me in 10 minutes. They're tired of it. They go somewhere else. But there it was like, I want to help, Dad. I want to help, Dad. I want to help you, Dad. I want to help you, Dad. And you let them help.
to bless them. I didn't have him to paint. I'm not saying to my wife, we have five, we can paint the whole house in no time. He makes me nervous when he helps. You understand? My joy is to be with him. And I think God sometimes, when he looks down from heaven and sees me in the pulpit, is nervous. I think he lets me help because it blesses me. Do you understand? And I forget that on his end, the purpose of trading away his own son was so that I could be with him again in fellowship. But what he really desires is me. It tells us this in the book of Revelation. You have to turn there. I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God," that's Jesus Christ, "is with men, and he will dwell with them. They shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them." I mean, as the eternal state is described, the first three things it's saying is, they're going to be with me, I'm going to be their God, I'm going to be with them, my dwelling place is going to be with them. His name is Emmanuel, God with us. The heart of God is that we would be with him and that he would be with us. And there's some joy that he places just in being with us. Again, you know, Hannah, she's 5 years old. She's so crazy. She just was perpetual. You know, I look at her and think, if we could put a wire on that and run the electricity in the house with it or something, we could harness that, you know. I mean, she makes me tired watching her. But there are times when she just settles down and she'll, for two sentences, she'll communicate in English, you know, her English. And she's 5 years old, and just to listen to her and look into her face as she tries to, you know, we had company the other night. She came out with this jump rope, and she said, "You want to see me jump? I've been practicing, you know." And I just looked at her, practicing, you know, just who could say that but her, practicing. But it's rare because, I mean, she's so busy, you know what I mean? And I want to bless her with all the things I let her do, but I like to look at them. You know, they have freckles. Josh is 7, and I have found freckles in the last year that I hadn't taken note of before. Sometimes when they're sick, they're still enough for me just to look at them and realize this or that. But most of the time, you try to get them, and they're like, you know, and you're like, just want to see you for a second. And don't you feel like God is like that with us sometimes? We want to be in the kitchen. We want to be doing this. And God just wants to grab us. And we go, isn't it hard to believe? And I think it is. That the greatest joy of his heart is to be with us. Not what we do for him, but to be with us. Sometimes I don't even want to be with me. And I can't get away from me. I know people who move to another state and they don't know. They're trying to get away from themselves. And when they get there, it's a bummer because they're still there. And because we know how we are. We know the wrestling within. We know the busyness. We know the tendency to, you know, to just do things instead of bringing ourselves in the presence. We know the hypocrisy. We know the lust. We know the anger. We know the different things we go through. And it's hard for us as we struggle with those things, I think, to really believe with all of our hearts that the Lord of the universe desires to sit with us. Thank you.
And you always have to remember that it's us in Christ. It's because of Jesus that he can sit with us and see us, not as we see ourselves, but in the righteousness of Christ. And he can see us right now as holy, though we see all these things we wrestle with. And it tells us in Romans that he's the God that calls things that are not as though they were. And it just is a gentle reproof for me to read through these things and remind myself, I hope he's not sitting at home waiting to talk to somebody. He's certainly welcome in our house. I hope I remember to slow myself down enough to find him and spend time with him. I hope if you don't know Christ this morning when we stand and pray, you realize he doesn't want you to join a denomination. He doesn't want you to be part of a religious system. I have children at home. I don't want them to be part of a religion, a daddy religion. They're my children. It's a relationship. If you don't know him this morning, what he wants is you. He has paid for you in the blood of his own son. He loves you so much. He is more concerned about your life than you're concerned about your own. He has gotten you to a mall where you could hear this message because he knew he couldn't get you in a church. That's how much he loves you. Don't leave without praying and asking Christ to forgive your sins, to give you life, to bring you into the family of God. That's what he wants. Let's stand and pray.